Know-nothingism is obviously not new in American politics, and here I'm going to use that term in a somewhat generic way, not as a direct reference to the Know-Nothing Party or the American Party of the 1850s, a political party dedicated to vicious nativism, although obviously nativism has been in American politics the whole time, we're experiencing a lot of it right now, but I'm going to use Know-Nothing as sort of a general term for proud ignorance. Which, in a way, reflects the usage of the term from the 19th century. When American party members were asked if they knew of this party, they said, "Well, I know nothing." Feigned ignorance, pretend ignorance, proud ignorance. That kind of proud ignorance, very common in American politics, not new. And yet, I do think that the success of President Trump as a politician in winning office, not so much as a person governing the country, but as someone in winning office, and his influence on the entire Republican Party has yielded a particularly virulent form of this proud ignorance, of this know-nothingism. You see it everywhere, especially, of course, in President Trump, who is plainly ignorant of basically everything relating to governing, relating to his own policy priorities. When you hear him rant about asylum seekers, for example, I want you to listen carefully because it is clear, it is apparent that when he says asylum, he means literal mental asylums. He doesn't mean people coming to a border and hoping to claim refuge. He means insane asylums. And he is constantly talking about other countries sending their inmates from insane asylums to the United States. That's what he means. That's what he's talking about.
Under the Biden administration, 25 million people came in, and they came from prisons and mental institutions, and they were drug dealers, and all sorts of people came in that shouldn't be here. They came from the jails all over Venezuela, all over the world, the Congo.
There's no other way to interpret his words. Likewise, he doesn't know what a tariff is. He doesn't know what a trade deficit is. He thinks a trade deficit is a literal deficit of funds, not simply an imbalance between exports and imports. He sees U.S. imports, us buying from other countries, as a loss, despite the fact that that's nonsense. When I buy a camera, when I buy a computer, when I go out for a nice dinner, I'm not in a deficit with the restaurant. I'm not in a deficit with the camera company. I am buying something that I want, that I will utilize, that I will receive use from and benefit from. And in the same way, when the United States buys things from other countries, it's receiving benefits. Now, there are some goods that maybe it's better for strategic reasons to produce at home, say, computer chips. But for the most part, having a trade deficit is more a reflection of the fact that you are a wealthy country that can afford to spend a lot then it is a problem. But Trump doesn't understand this. He thinks it's a literal money out of your pocket. And so he thinks tariffs, which seek to balance trade deficits, are good. But he also doesn't seem to understand what they are. He seems to think that a tariff is a tax that the other country pays. I mean, he says that.
These tariffs took in hundreds of billions of dollars to make great deals for our country, both economically and on a national security basis. Everything was working well. Countries that were ripping us off for decades are now paying us hundreds of billions of dollars. They were ripping us so badly, you all know that. Everybody knows it. Even the Democrats know it. They just don't want to say it. And yet these countries are now happy, and so are we. We made deals. The deals are all done. And they're happy.
And that you can just tariff goods, that there's no problem, there's no issue. There's no complication, there's no side effect, it's just free money.
It's free real estate.
And he believes that other presidents were too stupid to figure this one out. The guy knows nothing. He is plainly and proudly ignorant. And what's interesting is that the most MAGA candidates also adopt this. The president's choice for South Carolina Senator Darlene Graham, the sister of Lindsey Graham, recently gave a jumbled and convoluted answer to a very simple question. What ought to be the U.S.'s stance towards Taiwan? The traditional stance the U.S. has had is called strategic ambiguity, where basically we're like, you know, we value Taiwan's independence, we value our relationship with China, we'll see what happens. You talk around it, and then you let it lie. Very easy, almost a gimme as far as questions go. But Graham did not know enough to give even a slightly cogent answer.
On the national security question as well, Senator, are Taiwan and the South China Sea national security issues for the United States? If so, why?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Are Taiwan and the South China Sea national security issues for the United States? And if so, why or how?
I'm just going to be honest here. I'm not on national security. I'm not that informed on national security. But I do support the military. My brother was in the Air Force for 33 years. So I will do everything I can to support the military. My dad was in the Army. I'm not a polished politician up here. I'm national security.
And then when pressed on this, she said instead that she was worried about the important issues, like boys and girls' restrooms. I don't think that's an important issue. I think that's a fake one, drummed up to spread hate and drive wedges between people. But then I'm not the Nepo baby next senator from South Carolina. So, you know, whatever. Byron Donalds, the Republican nominee for governor in Florida, was recently asked about Florida's measles outbreak. Shouldn't you be pushing vaccination? Here was his response.
So is your message to Florida parents, get your kids vaccinated against that one?
No, actually, my message to Floridians and quite frankly to Americans is the reason why we have seen a measles outbreak in certain parts of the country is because of rampant illegal immigration into the United States from the previous administration. Margaret, before Joe Biden
what
came to office, when our borders were basically secure, Margaret, we've seen the outbreaks in El Paso, Texas, in Southwest Florida, where I live, and many other parts, where you know that you have a situation. People have come into the country illegally, have not had that vaccination schedule, and not the ones today on young kids that parents do have concerns about.
Not only is this factually incorrect, but it's nonsense. It's, again, the kind of proud ignorance, and given the anti-immigrant sentiment, very reminiscent of the OG know-nothings, that characterizes so much of the modern Republican Party. Really, outside of a handful of Republican lawmakers, can you think of anyone of any national stature in this party who has any interest in solving an actual problem facing Americans? Solving the high cost of living, solving the housing crisis, solving the lack of access to health care, solving food insecurity. If anything, the policies, such as they have of these Republicans, would exacerbate these problems. The stance is this proud disregard of any kind of knowledge, this proud contempt for knowledge of any sort. Now, I know I began this video tying this all up with Trump, and I do think that Trump has sort of accelerated, supercharged all of it. But this is also a long-standing aspect of Republican governance at the national level. Arguably the most consequential Republican speaker of the past 40 years, Newt Gingrich, infamously destroyed Congress's capacity to make policy, both because it allowed him to centralize power in the Speaker's office and out of a general disdain for institutionalized expertise. Ronald Reagan also was defined by this disdain for institutionalized expertise. His economic and tax agenda rested on essentially fairy tales about the powerful ability of money for the rich to benefit everyone. As he often is, Trump is something of a break in that he is so distinctive, he takes something to such an extreme that it becomes qualitatively different, and he is in continuity with the past, in continuity with the Republican Party as it's been since the 1980s. Yes, you can point to Republican officials, Republican lawmakers who were policy wonks during this period, but when it comes to Republican voters and to the energies and emotions that animate Republican politics, from Reagan onwards, from Nixon onwards, those animating energies, those animating emotions have been contempt for expertise, contempt for governance, hostility to the very notion of public goods, and all of this tied in a host of racial, religious, ethnic, and gender-based resentments. Trump represents the extent to which those animating emotions and attitudes and feelings have superseded any kind of serious political activity within the Republican Party and become the dominant force behind both the politicians and the officials and the voters. Or as the cliche goes, now the inmates are in charge of the asylum. There's that word again. So to extend that analogy, perhaps a little more than it should be, is there a warden? And when will he come back in control? And I think the answer is that there is no warden. And this is just how the Republican Party is. And that's how, and it's how it will be for the foreseeable future. And that does leave the country in a dilemma. You can't actually have a situation where one party is trying to govern, however unsuccessfully, and the other party is committed to destroying the capacity to govern. It doesn't really work out. And I don't have any answers for this one. One of mine, potentially, is political reform. Changing the political system such that the incentives within the Republican Party are different. But if you believe, as I do, that some of this is an emergent property of the voters themselves, of the people who are committed to Republican candidates, and that those energies from the voters are what fueled Trump and gave him his prominence and are shaping the Republican Party across the board, then I'm really not sure what you do here. It really may be that until there is some seismic change in the United States itself, the kind of seismic change that completely reconfigures a party system, it may be that until that point comes, we're all just hanging on for dear life as we attempt to navigate a situation where every once in a while, every so often, fairly regularly, the mechanisms of state are captured by a bunch of people who want nothing more than to corrupt them, destroy them, and render them useless for the next people who happen to take the reins. A little bleak, this one. I apologize. It happens sometimes. Thank you, as always, for watching. Let me know what you think, and I'll see you next time.